Birth, Chapter 17. Abdullah Bayazid did not run the Los Angeles Times. He owned it. Still, the idea of compiling one of the largest newspapers in the world with everything from financial reports to the obituaries was fascinating. He was an insatiable reader and had devoured the ancient books as well as modern works on the origin and destiny of the earth. He bought the controlling interest for one main reason: to stay in the light of the public eye. The people that were angry at him for escaping the sword of Islamic justice back in the early 70s were mostly dead now. Either old age or the other edge of that sword had caught up with him. They had sons, and their sons had sons, and the task of judging him had been passed down, along with the inheritance in a global power that it was as old as the earth itself. In the ancient times, they were born with a mission. Some say they were the offspring of Eve, but not Adam. In the garden, there was more than one suitor, say the ancient records. The first loved her more than air. The second lusted for her and beguiled her. And from that first union came the seed that gave roots to the evil that rose to power, and fell, and rose again, all by the power of the sword. The second lover fathered the higher man. To this seed was given the dominion over the earth by the Creator. As long as there was a father to tell a son about the eldest son's inheritance that was robbed from their forefathers, there would be soldiers willing to sacrifice everything to destroy that treasure for everyone. Somewhere in the shadows, the dark prince that beguiled the virgin in the garden spoke to his children. He gave them secrets. He told them about weapons and how to create currency and how to manipulate it to rule the world. He gave them power in this earthly life beyond measure and promised them limitless bounty if they could destroy Adam's children. He spent thousands of years tempting them and betraying them and luring them into his game of material wealth and slavery so that their souls would be lost to the Creator. It was the true war of wars. It was fought on every world and every galaxy throughout the universe. And the Dark Prince was winning on every world, inasmuch as Abdullah could tell. He read how worlds were put together, capable of sustaining mortal life. They were formed of two parts, one spiritual and one temporal, and one day, it was prophesied, they would come apart and take their respective spirits with them. This grand separation would divide the children. So far, the more part always remained with the temporal planets, doomed to starvation of the very spirit that gave them hope and joy. They would become hopeless and joyless, exactly like the children of the Dark Prince. As he put down the phone that had never rung before this night, he felt the love for his son. He was afraid for him, but he knew that he had taught him well. This younger son was able to swallow his rage, unlike his brother. Orphan, he thought, was going to be a great man. But first he had to find out more about the Deepwater Horizon. Why had British Petroleum prevented him from calling home? Why had they sequestered the men from that rig? What happened was a tragedy. But was it an accident? He had to find out, and he knew just where to start. He sat down at his special terminal, tied to the firewalled resources of the planet's largest news organization. He started with the rig itself. Built in South Korea by Hyundai Heavy Industries in 2001 and owned by Transocean. It sank this morning in 5,000 feet of water, 48 miles off the Mississippi shore in the Gulf of Mexico. No evidence there. Tony Hayward, the chief executive of BP, sold 1.4 million pounds of his shares in the fuel giant weeks before the Gulf of Mexico oil spill caused its value to collapse. Goldman Sachs sold 4,680,822 shares of BP in the first quarter of 2010, less than 30 days before the explosion. Goldman's sales were the largest of any firm during that time. Goldman pocketed slightly more than $266 million if their holdings were sold at the average price of BP stock during the quarter. It represented 44% of their total investments in British Petroleum and more than 90% of its holdings in the Deepwater project. That's very strange, he thought, as the facts began loading. Halliburton bought an oil rig firefighting company, Coots and Boots, just 8 days before the Deepwater Horizon exploded. They paid $240 million for it, and that's pretty high for a company that's not really made any money in several years. The more he researched, the more plain the story appeared. These people knew this was going to occur. There was more to it than the coincidence of just completing routine casing cement work by Halliburton on the well beneath the rig. The casing is temporarily cemented shut or plugged during this process to make sure the casing is secure through dozens of strata from the surface of the ground all the way to the geological formation bearing the oil. Then they just re-drill through the concrete to open the well back up. This prevents contaminants from getting into the stream of oil making its way up to the pump, but it also prevents the oil from below from pushing into aquifers where drinking water might be flowing. The chances of this being the cause of the blowout were slim to none. He had drilled dozens of wells in Iraq and knew the procedures very well. This service company had put out many well fires in Iraq during the 1990 Kuwait invasion when Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard torched the wells as they retreated. It made it even more bizarre that Halliburton would spend nearly $250 million to buy a company that's only needed when there's a fire, barely a week before they are needed on that rig that they had just finished casing. Says here that experts decided the sinking of the rig was actually caused by the firefighting team. Instead of using foam to extinguish the fire, they used seawater, overwhelming the ballasts, which flipped the rig and caused it to sink in more than a mile of water. Whoa, that was clever, he thought, sinking the evidence in a mile of ocean. Brilliant. Still, it was the well casing failure that caused the rig to catch fire and explode. So what made the well casing fail on such a calm spring morning in the Gulf of Mexico? It became clear to Abdullah Bayazed that the richest companies on earth knew when it would happen. They used this knowledge to make themselves individually very rich. He also knew there was only one person who could tell the truth. And that person was his youngest son. It was then that he noticed a small icon appear in the lower left of his screen. The cell phone location information had arrived. He had to act fast now. He picked up the phone that rarely rang. He dialed the number he rarely dialed. Bayazed, I'm sending the location data now. 5 hours? You have 4. Go get him now. Thanks, he said curtly over the phone. He thought for a moment if he had done the right thing. He could have sent one of his bodyguards, but there was something wrong here on a much larger scale. Everything he could find indicated that the Deepwater was the finest rig of its kind in the world. The movement of so much money, the expensive insurance policies, and what seemed like the deliberate sinking of this billion-dollar cash cow told him this somehow was being run from much higher up. Such planning to compensate for cosmic events that had not happened yet required a perspective that was older than humanity. That is why he called Hadid. The iron bar. He was unbreakable. His father saved his life in Iraq twice and helped him make it to America at the cost of his own. Hadid was born in Charlotte, North Carolina, and studied history at Chapel Hill. He entered the Secret Service at age 22 and has been assigned to nothing but presidents ever since. He knew what he was looking for from a very young age, which was very rare for a boy these days. He would know what to do. He knew his son would be safe now.